Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Moon, Moo, and You, the Collective Wisdom. Our guest is Sheila Odette, Astrology's Astrologer. She will discuss with us the chart of Temple Grandin, who was severely autistic as a child and is still autistic, but she's managed to really do well with it. And now she is an animal advocate and scientist, as well as an expert on altruism. Joining me now is Joan Adams. Hello, Joan.
Hello, Kate.
How are you?
I'm great. And
so great.
Yeah.
So great.
And all this
Hello,
is new
Sheila.
To me.
Hi.
Hi, Sheila.
Hi, sweet.
I saw a video of her before our shows, and I was just really amazed by how incredible she, I never saw her, but I had seen her book, Animals in Translation. So you've done her chart.
I have done her chart. She was born August the 29th. She was born the night that the movie, which was on HBO, won for Best Movie, Best Director, Best Leading Actress, Best, the father got the Best Actor, and so did the mother that played her.
Wow.
So I was, and that was her birthday. So I was pretty amazed of the fact that I had known about the book, and but I was so it was 11 o'clock at night, and I decided that I would watch the entire movie on HBO because they said they were taking it off the next day. So I, not only is this a movie about her, but this is, it was extremely, the director, and forgive me for not forgetting his name at this moment, because that is not really good, okay, but forgive me wherever you are, that he was able to see, to get the actual way that she saw things.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't see things like we do. Like if she saw a whole bunch of pair of shoes, it was like one of those flip charts. They all came together in like one picture. So it was, and when she would see something that she wanted to build, she saw all the measurements and how to do it just instantly. So, and he was able to do that and picture that. I was also really enamored of the fact that there was nothing said about the father. And in fact, you have to search really in to find out that Temple Grandin's father wanted her institutionalized. Because she would put, ficus on the wall, and she would do all kinds of things, and he wanted her to be put into an institution, so he sided with the doctor. Her mother must be remarried now, because her name is not Grandin anymore, the mother. So she must be remarried. But the fact about all that is that this seemed to be a woman dealing, her mother was dealing with against a patriarchal system, run by this male doctors that were telling her to institutionalize her. And then later on, Temple Grandin was also dealing with a male culture without any real father figure over here until she found the science teacher which really believed in her. So I was pretty, when I saw the chart, I knew that, of course, she was born on August the 29th, so that, of course, made her a Virgo. At first, I couldn't find the actual time. And when you don't have the actual time, then you do a solar chart. I guess the audience knows that, who knows about astrology. That means you do it for 12 noon, and that's the high point of the day. That's called a solar chart for the middle of the day if you don't have the actual time. However, I did do that, and then I got the actual time, which is 2:30 p.m. in Boston, Massachusetts. And it was so interesting because in the first chart, I did not get an intercepted house. There's a doggie.
That's mine.
Ah,
doggie. On the door.
Doggie's helping us with reading.
Yeah.
Hi, doggie. What's the doggie's name?
We have two. They're both barking.
Hogan
and Harley.
Oh, well, thank them.
Yeah, I will.
They must approve. Okay.
Yeah, they do.
So I found what I was looking for when I got the actual time. That's why I want to say sometimes it's really fortuitous for people to really call, and this is good for the audience to hear. It's really good for them to call into the Bureau of Vital Statistics, and you don't ask for the short form in your birth certificate. You ask for the long form. Because if you get the short form, it will not have the time on it a lot of times. That sounded good. Won't have the time on it a lot of times, okay?
Right. No, exactly.
So she is a Virgo. However, in working with various autistic children's charts, which I've done, I find they usually have an intercepted house. And what an intercepted house means to me is a play within a play within a play. In other words, they're not going to show you who they are until they feel that you are knocking on that door and that you're really safe for them to come out and play, you know? They just won't do it, an intercepted house. And that goes with people's charts that I work with intercepted houses. But then when you go to an intercepted house and then you find out that the sun, which is the God seed, which is the seed of the chart, is located in the intercepted house, that brings it up another notch. And then you find out that Mercury, of course, is there, and Venus and Virgo is there, all of that is in the intercepted house, you realize, and it's the ninth house, it's a house that really, it's a hero's quest. It's like the phoenix rising. It is, Temple Grandin, I look at her as somebody that came in here with a so-called disease to do an impossible thing. So if she was going to do that, she came in with a sun in Virgo, which means Virgo to me is the four lines. It looks like an M with the last thing turned in. So it's mental, the first line is mental, physical, emotional, and then the line that the M that's turned, the line that's turned in toward the middle of that is spiritual. So it means that inside that seed, they have to find them for themselves what they are here to do, because it really is not here. They don't have anybody to look at and say, oh, I want to be a dancer, or oh, I want to be an artist, or I want to be, it's not there. Michael Jackson is a Virgo too. Around the same time, I think his is August the 25th or something. He also has the Virgo sun, meaning no one else did. He broke through in music, and he broke through for a whole different way of dancing, and he broke through all of these barriers that never ever had been broken through. However, there were people around him that had been in the field. So this was even more, encompassed. If indeed, you look then for the moon, which is the mother, and in the chart, and you find the moon in Aquarius. Now, Joan, you know that Whitey has the moon in Aquarius, right?
Well, you just told me.
I told you before.
I know.
A month ago.
You know I don't understand. I just listen. I just take your wisdom and just soak it in, and that's it.
Yeah, well. And you and him have, your when you put your two charts together, your Mercury and Sun is in Aquarius. I mean, when I divide both your chart and his chart, Whitey's and yours, then I find out that both of them come together in the God seed. So you're both brought together to break some kind of thing.
Right.
What does that mean, break some kind of thing?
Sean? This fall.
Huh?
This fall.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. You're now in Aries. So, I mean, you're on it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you're on a breakthrough thing that's something that you have been born to do.
Ooh.
It's really interesting because I'm not mentioning names, but I really worked with a leader in the spiritual world this week, okay? I mean, that it was in very, very bad shape. And she had a progression right on her gestation point of the moon in Leo. And she was saying, but I'm old and tired. And I said, well, that's going to be tough because you're just starting your work. And she said, well, what should I do? And I said, the very first thing you should do is take old and tired out of your vocabulary.
Yeah, that sounds like an excuse.
Yeah, the very first. Well, she's been through a pretty traumatic, thing with her, with the disease. But it still means that her best work is yet to come. And what you're saying, Kate, is, old and tired means whatever story you tell, that is the story you're going to create.
Absolutely.
So if you're saying, I'm over the hill or I'm old and tired, of course, the universe with, I hate to say law of attraction, but I'll say it, okay? Babble words drive me nuts, okay? But, the universe magnetically, much better, will feed back to you exactly what your story is.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to Temple Grandin, I found that the moon in Aquarius, the moon is the environment that you put around you. Now, being, autistic is part of that. So the thing about, the kicking and the turning and the constant repeated patterns of the autistic child, that would be the moon in Aquarius. The moon around her, she felt as if it was electricity, absolutely on her skin and everything. It's like sounds are bigger and noises bigger and everything. And one of the ways that an autistic child soothes themselves is by pounding their feet and spinning in circles and doing all these things that basically people want to grab them and stop them because it's not comfortable for the person that's looking at it. But it's really the way they soothe themselves. What happened with her when she went to this farm was the fact that she saw that the cattle were being put into these places and they put them in these tight, like a crib that moves in on them to inoculate them, and make them very still. And so she went and asked her aunt if she would put her in that. Now, you can imagine, it's a ghastly-looking thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and she said, please, please. And the aunt, of course, the aunt put her in it. And she discovered that this soothed her autistic feelings. It just brought that in, really, and she felt very good about that. Well,
like a control thing?
Yeah. Joan, you know how a crib is?
Yeah.
If you would take both sides of that and push that in on you as tight as you can on either side.
Right.
With the head out the front.
Right. I have seen that with cattle.
Yeah. So she immediately, when she went to school, to make a long story short, built that. She saw that, measured it out, and built it, and put it in her dorm room. which you can imagine did not go over too well in this upper elite school, right?
Right.
So the woman that was living with her walked in and went down, of course, and reported it. And then there was a big thing about the counselor, that she went to the counselor's office, and the counselor said, well, what do you get from this machine? Do you get released? And, of course, Temple said, yes, I get released, because that's what she gets. But being, well, I'm not going to say that. I will say it. Okay, what the heck. Being a male, he took it into the sexual realm.
Mm-hmm.
And thought she had built a sexual machine in her room. So they kicked her out of school.
But what it was giving her, though, was a sense of control.
Yes, it was doing the same. She built the machine just like she saw with the cattle in her dorm room. Well, the aunt came back to the school and told the counselor and them what the machine was doing. So sometimes the school has a little bit of brains. They put her in with a blind girl. So the blind girl could not see the machine. But this blind girl was very sweet, and she became her best friend. And she said, do you mind my machine? And she said, no, that she couldn't even see it, but wanted to know if she could touch it. So they became really, really good friends. And also this teacher who was this, he right away saw, he gave her a really hard assignment. Well, he gave the whole class this hard assignment about building this room within this room on a tilt. It was really complicated, and it took, you know, just a genius to figure it out. And she wrecked it, she did this and she did that, but finally she figured it out. She figured out this thing that nobody else could do. Now, that in a chart is Uranus in Gemini. Uranus, or it can be Mercury in Aquarius, either one of those. But Uranus in Gemini is a mind when you see it in a chart. And she also has this Uranus in Gemini ruling her moon in Aquarius. But it is a mind that can see their environment and somehow measure it out and make it be able to be recognized by other people. That's the genius. Uranus in Gemini can interpret it into something that Mercury in Gemini can. Mercury in Gemini will get too befuddled with too much information, but Uranus in Gemini will be very specific about what it's going for. It's almost tunnel vision, which Temple Grandin had, tunnel vision. And that tunnel vision comes from that Uranus in Gemini and Venus, Sun, Mercury, and the intercepted house in Virgo. Had the disease not somehow been there, what we call a disease, it wouldn't have allowed her to focus as well as she learned to focus just by learning to focus with all of this stuff going on around her. She had to learn to tunnel through that. Is that clear?
Yeah. She did find a tunnel.
Okay, that's clear. Well, anyway, the chart is that she eventually went to see cattle, and she felt that the cattle were being killed not humanely. And she started to watch cattle in their natural surroundings. And I don't know, one time I was learning this thing for a show, a sign language, the Lord's Prayer. So I was up in the mountains, and I stood in this pasture, and I started signing the Lord's Prayer. And these cattle were way down at the bottom of the mountain. And after a while, I was so into it, I was on this little rock. I looked around, and the cattle had made a circle around me.
Ah.
And they were just watching me do these signs. And I thought, oh, my God, what an audience. I mean, it was remarkable. As long as I stood there rehearsing, they were around me. And there's one picture, I don't know if you saw it, Kate, on the Internet, where she's laying in the middle of cattle and they're all around her in a circle.
No, I didn't.
Well, it's a beautiful picture. And they're all around her in a circle. So she found out that the soothing thing, because of her twirling and being autistic and all, that the soothing thing with cattle was going in circles and moving in circles. And so when they put them into slaughter, they put them in straight chutes. and that the cattle would get frantic, and they would, you know, then drown, and in the water that they had to go through, they had to clean them before they went in, whatever that's called, you know, and they would drown because they had no steps to go down. And she built it again, you know, she built this contraption, which is the, again, that whole Uranus and Gemini moon in Aquarius. She built this whole big thing that went around in circles, and then the steps went down into the water, and then the cattle went to be slaughtered in a very, you know, they felt very safe about it. Now, the thing about it that was so interesting to me was being in a business meeting, being a girl, the way she got into where the cattle auction was is they wouldn't let her in because she was a girl. So she went out and sold her car, got a truck, threw mud all over it, rolled around in the dirt, put a hat on. I thought it was the neatest thing in the movie. And then everything is in your perception of reality, I thought. And then drove through the thing and went, okay, you know, hi. And the guy went, you can go through. And she got into the cattle auction. And then she made friends with a newspaper guy who was not very fond of the guy that was running the whole place. And she ran after him and said, would you write my articles? And he said, are you friends with this guy? And she said, no. And he said, anybody that isn't friends with that guy, I'll write anything that you write. I'll print anything you write, which was really neat, which when there was another angel on the path. But when she went into this meeting, I found the most interesting thing was that she was in with these big cattlemen. So you can imagine standing there with this drawing of this thing she wanted to do. And she said that that the cattle would go in these chutes and they would die humanely. And the one guy said, why do we care about that? They're going to be slaughtered anyway. Don't you believe in cattle being slaughtered? She said, I believe in cattle being slaughtered. I believe that they are sacrificing their lives for us so that we can have food. So therefore, the more loving the meat is, the more humane the slaughter is, that means the better the meat will be. And the guy went, oh, well, we're not spending all that money. And she immediately flipped into a businesswoman. I thought that was remarkable. And Claire Dane, I want to tell you, she did this. Claire Dane standing on the stage and talking, getting that award for playing her, you would never, and right beside her, she looks nothing like her. She talks nothing like her. She has no body movement like her. The way she got into this woman was one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen. It was just uncanny. And she said, okay, I'll tell you this. The cattle are being trampled. You're losing money. Cattle are being trampled. You can't use those cattle. So how much money do you lose on every cow that gets trampled? And she went into the whole money side of it and the whole business side of it besides the whole humanitarian side of it and the cow being killed. And my God, she got these men to build that machine. It was remarkable.
Oh, wow. Nice.
She got, yeah, it was, and you think about this is a girl with autism, that was in a man's world again, and at a business meeting, not only a man's world, you know, a woman in a man's world, but a woman with this disease in a man's world. And she then became, she solved all that thing, and it's being used all over the country. And then and Jupiter in Scorpio is an interesting thing to see too, because Jupiter, you know, Scorpio is really deep, and Jupiter magnifies things. It makes it bigger, where Saturn makes things narrow. It makes things narrow. There's rules and regulations, and it gets narrow and more narrow and more narrow. It's the whole saying that you really want, it's better a lot of times to have a beginner, because when you have a beginner, there's a million possibilities. But when you have somebody that is really studied, they're limited, you know, in mm-hmm. their possibilities, because they don't try new things. So that beginner's mind, you know, is really deep. I remember when I did Manimal Mantra six times. And the first time I did it, though, I was 19 years old, and I was in a professional company in summer stock. And I had professional actors, and, you know, in summer stock, it turns over every 2 weeks, and you have to do another show. Well, what happened was we were doing the producer could not get the rights to the show, so we only had 5 days to do Man of La Mancha, okay, at a professional level in a professional theater. And I was too dumb to know I couldn't do it. That's what I'm talking about. So I went out, and the actors from New York were sitting out in the steps of the playhouse, and the girl who was playing Aldonza said, "You think we can do this? We can't do it." I said, "Well, get off your asses and get in here because we're doing it." So, by God, we put La Mancha together in 4 days. 4 days we put it together in. And it was really quite elegant, and a critic came in and was standing in the aisle, and he said, "Oh, look, because one of the horses that do the tango in the beginning under the horse thing, they didn't totally miss a step, but they went off a little bit, and you can tell right away because it's a flamenco dance that is just so precise that it's beyond." I did teach. I even taught in one of the times I did the show. I taught somebody that couldn't dance to do that dance, and because he was a singer, I did it by beat. It was really fun. I just tapped out the beats and made his feet do. It was interesting. Anyway, this critic said, "Oh, I'm going." And I grabbed him by the neck. I remember, and I put him against the wall, and I said, "If you say one thing in the newspaper bad about this show, you are looking at a miracle. Do you hear me? Say miracle." And he said, "Okay, Sheila, I'll say miracle." You know. So, but then after you do it six times, what I'm getting at is then you know all these things that you didn't know when you were 19. So I looked back at the 19-year-old, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, the last time I did it, I was in my 30s, and I thought, oh, my God, I would have never taken that chance that I did as a 19-year-old. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I was thinking about a Temple Grandin and all this, her innocence was beautiful, you know? Her innocence in knowing, somehow knowing that she would get this done. The movie ends where she goes into an autistic conference that her mother gets her to go to, and there's a professor talking, and he's talking about stopping, how they could stop the spinning and stopping the kicking and stuff, you know, that autism does. And she stood up and said, "Why would you want to do that?" And everybody in the audience turned around, and she said, "Why would you want to take that away when it's the only kind of peace an autistic child has?" And they turned around, all the audience, and said, "You have an autistic child." And she said, "I am an autistic child." And so she then took over the whole conference. And she's been, you know, she talks all over the country. She was in Millersville. I was with a professor that I have lunch with, and she said that she sets everything up on the podium, you know, very, all these things. And then somebody took a flashbulb picture, and she said, "I wouldn't do that if I were you." Because she said it would not be very pretty, okay? Mm-hmm. So I thought about that, and then I thought about, you know, they have all these attributes of indigo children.
Yeah.
Have you heard about that?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when you think about, if you put the definition of autism together with the indigo child, they come into the world with this feeling of royalty, and they have a feeling of deserving to be here and are surprised that other people don't share that. And, you know, self-worth is not really a big issue with an autistic child. They often tell parents really who they are. And they have difficulty with absolute authority. Authority without explanation or choice. Now, that was brought up in a speech that was made by her when she said, they said, "Did your mother have trouble with you at the dining room table?" And she said that her mother said, "I don't care what disease you have. You will sit there and eat like a proper child." And she gave her an explanation. you know? And they simply will not do certain things. For example, they don't like waiting in line and stuff. They get frustrated with systems that are ritualistically oriented and don't require creative thought. And that was really brought out with her. And they often see better ways of doing things. That's with her. And they bust systems open. And they seem antisocial unless they are with their own kind sometimes, or if they're really understood. If there are no others of like consciousness around them, they often turn inward. They don't respond to guilt discipline at all. And they are not shy in letting you know what they need. Now, it's very interesting because the aspects of the crystal children, you know, and people put them together. But the crystal children are more like Down syndrome children. That's the difference. They're not as brutal in some ways. They have intense stares and they're highly affectionate and they usually talk later in life and they're musically oriented and sing and they're telepathic and self-inventive. And they get sometimes, you know, they do get diagnosed with Asperger's or, you know, autism, but they're even tempered, sweet, and loving, and are forgiving of others, and they love animals, and they're very artistic. So people get the indigo children mixed up with the definition of the crystal children.
Mm-hmm.
They're really quite different. So I found it interesting that Temple Grandin, though, her progress chart was that on June the 30th, 2010, her moon went into Gemini right with the Uranian thing, and she got this award after her moon went into Gemini. And on her birthday would be a solar return of her chart. Mm-hmm. And it was almost around the same time as the solar return would be. I don't have it right here, that day. And the solar return is when your sun, God seed, comes around and comes back to where your sun is. It can happen any time in a 24 or 48-hour period between, you know, that the sun returns to its original spot. That's called a solar chart. And that's supposed to be what it gives you a clue of what's going to happen in the year to come. Not the natal chart. It's a solar chart. So, but that happened. She got this award on her birthday, and she was never able to hug. And she was up on that stage hugging Claire Dane and the producer.
Oh, that is neat.
Which was, I mean, people didn't understand the magnitude of that, you know? And the director was so beautiful when he said, you know, I was so happy that I could get this on film, the picture of the way, and she said, in an interview, she said that he did that so well, putting on film exactly the way her mind looks, which is a big, huge thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I always have, I heard this thing on television, which I think I read it before, but, you know, it really struck me, and somebody said, a doctor was saying about this man that was operating on a Tourette's. He had Tourette's, you know, where they say shit, 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 and all this stuff. But he was the only, there were only three surgeons in the country that could operate on these babies, these premature babies.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of them. And so when he went into the room, the parents were there. And the parents, he started getting into he went into the shit, 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 and da-da-da, you know, it was a profound program. And so they went to the head of the hospital, and they said, we don't want him to operate. Mm. And the head of the hospital said, the head said to the parents, I have come to believe that profound creativity emanates from a very deep place. No one has explained it yet. It's a mystery. And it's bound up with all kinds of demons. And sometimes you see them and sometimes you don't. And you're telling me you see demons in this person. Yes. But also with those demons, you have to look at the gifts that go with them. Now, if you can accept that as true, you will be able to trust this doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, and I ran the whole thing back and I copied that because I thought that really makes sense because mostly all, everybody that has a create a great gift, it comes along with demons. And you have to accept those demons with a gift, because that's the way you go deep with demons. If you know, if you run away from demons, if you run away from the crisis in your life, then you don't, your heart doesn't open, you don't break open. And so it's staying with that, and all of us have some kind of rite of passage. And that rite of passage, I know that Joan said that she wanted to hear something about me, right?
Yeah, please.
Well, Joan, I am really from the theater world. You'd have never guessed that, right?
Yeah.
Well, I grew up in a dance studio. My mother, we lived in Lancaster, but my mother put me on the train and took me to New York every Saturday in my life.
Uh-oh.
I took 5 classes a day. I took theater at Neighborhood Playhouse. So every Saturday when everybody's playing football and going to football games and doing all their stuff, I was on a train to New York, which everybody thought was neat. But for me, you know, it was kind of separation from everybody else. In many ways. I did have girlfriends, you know, but still in all, my whole world was theater. And then on Sunday, you rehearse shows to go, you know. Then we toured the whole country. We went to Steel Pier and performed on Steel Pier over the summer. And then we went around to Veterans Hospital. So we were, you know, the whole world was studio, theater, studio, theater, studio. After work, my father would pick me up and take me to eat out, and then I'd go right to the studio, which seems like a glamorous life. But in some ways it's pretty narrow. In some ways it's, but the one thing I learned in New York was that I came on Saturday and most of the children in Carnegie Hall and where I took, they were in class all week. Now when you watch, you think you can dance on television and all these shows, there are combinations that we call in class. They're like 48 counts long, and they're all different intricate steps. And basically, these other kids were learning them all week. So the teacher would always say to me, why are you standing in the back of the class? And I was standing in the back of the class because I didn't know the steps. But I would get it, you know. So I had to catch up on Saturday on everything that they were learning all week. So what I learned from that was you learn, and I learned that when I did Man of La Mancha, what I learned from that very young is you have a certain amount of time to learn something, and nothing is impossible. It's like on television when these kids do, you think you can dance, they did 5 dances in the last show, 5 dances in 1 week with different choreography, with different muscle movement, different muscle tone, different hip-hop to ballroom to... You know, the muscle memory in a dancer is, if you learn ballet, it's a different muscle memory from ballroom. People don't understand that. You hold your body a different way in ballroom. And hip-hop and street dancing, your muscle memory is down. It's like on the ground with pounding and bent knee. But with ballet dancing, you hold yourself up and the carriage is up and everything is high and up. So what happened on this last show and you think you can dance, 2 of the really fabulous ballet dancers, the one who, Alex, who I think is as good as Nureyev and Baryshnikov, who I both saw dance, he got hurt because of the muscle memory of his legs and body were not used to the pounding. So, anyway, I was in theater, and then I came back to Lancaster, and I decided that I would stay in Lancaster. And to make a long story short, I did all kinds of shows at the theater at Fulton in the summertime. I did regional theater and I did professional theater. And I decided to open an Institute of Fine Arts, which I did with, I had 12 teachers. And interesting, in this little street corner, way back in my studio, I had a ballet mistress from the New York City Ballet. I had Judy Williams, who was a dancer from, and they all just showed up. I had a Suzuki teacher from Canada. I had a sign language teacher that taught with Marcel Marceau, a mime teacher. And all of these teachers came together in this place. It was like pretty. And my thing from to bring to Lancaster was that there was a lot of backbiting in the dance world in, when my mother was teaching dance, that if you went to this studio, you couldn't go to that studio, and this teacher was against that teacher. And I decided that if I brought all these teachers together in one institute, that there would be no fighting, that you just go from one class to another the way I did in New York, you know, because there's never any fighting here. It was always, you know, I'm going down to ballet class up the street, and I'm going over to jazz class, and everybody supported an eclectic kind of thing. Well, I really think a lot of things happened, but Lancaster was not really ready for an institute, and it went well till I got a board of directors. Don't ever get a board of directors, you know. And I remember the Pennsylvania Ballet Company came to town, and I was standing at the back of the rail watching the Pennsylvania Ballet dance, and this wonderful woman who ran that company, oh, my God, she was brilliant. She said to me, you know, they will have you over the coals someday. And I said, oh, my God, what happened? And she said, I'm being thrown out. And she said, and you will too. And I said, oh, no, never, you know. Well, it so happens that it doesn't, you know, I wasn't as good as Temple Grandin at that, I might add, okay? Because I would just say, artistically, we want this, you know. So, anyway. We were paying.
I don't know. Explain to me how a child, I don't understand. As a child, you were into theater.
Yeah.
By your mother's decision.
Yeah.
And she, like, put you in that kind of a school. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. She wanted to be a dancer. She hid shoes under the bed. Now, my mother was pretty profound because she would stand and she would roll up the rug and she would do all the dance steps with me. And then I hurt myself one day. And she was 29 years old. And so we were in Philadelphia then at the Pete Conlow studio, the Ludwig studio. And Pete said, why don't you take the lesson because you know all the steps anyway. My mother became a dance teacher at 30 years old. And she had a dance school of 300 people.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
And one day, one of the most profound moments of my life was I went into Carnegie Hall, and I was at the front desk, and I went into the dressing room to get dressed, and I heard in the main studio, Madame Nechinova, who taught the beginner's class in the front studio, which was about 60 people, and I heard this voice, and I went over to the woman at the desk, and I said, that sounds like my mom. And she said, that is your mom. Madam didn't show up this morning, so your mother's teaching that class. And I stood in the doorway and cried. It was...
Yeah.
Because it was so profound that this woman, who had only 2 or 3 years of training, was in the front studio at Carnegie Hall teaching ballet. It was really it was a profound thing to me, and she just looked over and waved. And it was interesting because then I had a Japanese teacher in that studio. He was called Yaichi Nomura, and he did he taught in the monks, you know, in the temples. I was just enamored of him. But we had a sword dance that we had to do. And I went into his class, and it's 6 months it took before you were allowed to do this sword dance.
Mm.
So, and it was one of those saber swords, you know, and it was all kinds of intricate moves. So I was in the class 3 weeks, and he came over and bowed and handed me the sword. Now, I want to tell you, I knew 3 steps of this dance, and there were 50 people in the room. And this was the big moment at the end of the class, you know, when everybody comes to the door and watches.
Mm-hmm.
So I took the sword. Well, my mother came to the door. Her class was over, and I looked over to her, and she was, like, white and shaking her head like, don't do this. So I did it. I did my 3 steps, and then I made up the rest of the dance. Made the whole dance up. He walked. I had to write every step down on the way home from the train every week and all. He walked over to my, I don't know how he knew this, he walked over to my mother and he bowed to her and he said, you have a choreographer here.
Mm.
I was 12 and he redefined my life. write in that statement to her, because she always wanted me to do everything exactly the way they taught me, you know, in New York. And I was always changing the steps on the way home, and she would go crazy. And so he was a teacher that I didn't know it then, but he profoundly changed my life. Anyway, to make a long story short, the institute went belly up. I was alone. I had never been out of the theater. I had never been out of the studio. I did not even know how to cook. I didn't know what to do. I just simply, one weekend, it was over Easter, I went to St. Mary's Church every day over Easter and went through that whole passage of Jesus from the crucifixion to the resurrection, and I don't know what that did to me. That weekend, I always say, everything was so clear, and I was even sleeping in a car, and I was so happy to be sleeping in a car because nobody could get to me. Nobody could tell me what to do. I didn't have anything. I didn't have to be anywhere to teach. I didn't have to be anywhere to choreograph. And I started taking astrology classes with a friend who was, Kate knows, right?
Yeah.
She looked at me and said, I don't know why you're sitting in this room. You're creative. You won't ever learn astrology. You're too dumb.
Oh, no.
Well, it was a gift.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, who was your teacher? And she said, Julian Armstead. I had a male course with him, and I went to this camp that he was teaching at. I said, where is he? Well, she said, I think he's in New York. And I said, really? Now, my father worked in the railroad, and I had a pass, and I had no problem with going to New York to study astrology because I was brought up that way,
mm-hmm.
to get on the train and go to New York and study. So I found out that there was a huge astrology convention, and I went in, and I paid my money, and then they said to me, what room are you going in? I said, I'm going in with Julian Armstead. They said, you're not allowed in there. And I said, why? They said, because it's only for, how long have you been studying? I said, 6 months. They said, that's for astrologers that have been studying 12 years. That's Uranian astrology. I said, would you please move? I paid my money at the door. I'm allowed to go in anywhere I want. And if I don't understand what's going on in the room, I'll walk out. So move. So she said, well, you're not going. I said, that's my problem, you know, not yours. And, of course, I didn't understand a word you say. So at the end, I went up, and he's standing there, and I said, hi. And to tell you what Julian looks like, he looks like Patrick Stewart on Star Trek with the bald head, and he has that voice, you know, he looks like a movie star. Anyway, he turned around and looked at me. I said, hi, and he said, hi. I said, I would like to learn this Uranian astrology. And he said, right. And I said, I hear you teach. And he said, yes. And I said, there's only one problem. And he said, what is that? I said, I'm a beginner. He said, I'm looking for a beginner. I don't believe in anything they're saying here. I believe if you learn this wheel first, you will be a better astrology with contemporary astrology. So you're exactly who I'm looking for. So
wow.
he became my teacher. And I knew, I asked, what he was a Leo, and then the next teacher that I went down in the village to learn from, he was a Leo. And it was amazing because I learned things about astrology, like we had to do charts backwards. In other words, I would do an interview with you, Joan, and not know your chart and then make it up.
Ooh.
That we had to do charts like that. And
talked to you intuitive. Developed your intuitive
skills. Oh, yeah. And it fed into my artistic imagination. And then he walked in the room and said, do one thing on that wheel. And he came back, and I had not done anything. And he said, well, I'm leaving the room. I don't care if it's right or wrong, but do something. But finally, we came to a point, and he said, you have to learn the math. And I looked at him and said, no. And I said, we have computers now. Well, not at the thing we have it now. He said, you will not know exactly what you're doing till you learn the math. And so I went into class with 14 people who could add numbers in their heads who were, oh, God. Oh, my God, crying. And I would go to Long's Park, and there's a park here in Lancaster, and I would sit there and make somebody, I wouldn't take a car. I would make them drop me off so that I would sit there for 5 hours and do a chart by from the beginning to the end. It was excruciating. Mm-hmm. Anyway, one day he put up two charts, and he put fire, earth, air, and water, and he put cardinal, fixed, and mutable, and he put positive and negative, and he put rational and intuitive, and east and west, and north and south. That's what he put up. And then he put the charts up with no names, and that's all we had. And everybody in the room, I started to talk. And I said, well, that's Neptune, and that would mean that this person probably isn't. It's a Neptune Mars. They have probably they're very deep. And then I looked over, and I saw Neptune with Venus, and I said, it's probably a movie star. And the person there beside them is a Scorpio, so they're probably together. And then I stopped, and I said, nobody else was talking. See, they all knew the math, but they all shut up. And Julian said, no, keep talking. And everybody said, keep talking. I said, that's Elizabeth Taylor. That's Richard Burton. I never saw their names. They took me to dinner that day, Joan.
They should have.
Well, they had ignored me up to that point. But it was so interesting because Julian Armstead then said to the class, everybody can learn the math, but the craft is something else. The craft is like a dance. That's what he said. It's like a dance. And you have to learn the way the dance goes together in the chart and who is dancing with who when.
Wow.
So it was a profound moment. It was really neat. And that's how I became an astrologer. But I didn't become an astrologer because I wanted to become an astrologer. I studied astrology because I thought it was I felt that it was your own card, and to get to the deepest part, my moon is in Scorpio, to get to the deepest part of yourself, which you never can get to, it's study your own chart. Study your own mandala, because it's all there. It's all there, okay? So, that's my story.
That's really cool.
I thought you knew all that, Kate.
I did, but you know what? I didn't know that you were virtually homeless when you decided to learn astrology.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
And, you know, it could be embarrassing to say that, but it was that was probably the happy. And you know what? I had no money. I got some money to do the lesson in New York, and then I walked all the way to the village. And I took my class, and I was walking back up the street, and I said, oh, my God, if I only had 30 cents for a soft pretzel, because I was going right back on the train.
Yeah.
And I reached in my pocket. There were 30 cents.
There were 30 cents. Wow, that's so cool.
I said that.
I'm getting feedback.
Yeah, it's starting to echo.
Yeah. Echo. Oh, I love this. I said if I asked for $30, I could have got a steak, right?
Right.
Yeah, that taught me, you know, you should set your stakes higher.
Ask for what you really want.
Yeah, ask for what you really want, right?
Right.
So I took up all that time talking about myself.
Oh, well, that's what I wanted to know.
Oh.
Because I never had quite understood. I've never known anybody in the theater.
Oh, come on, Joan. You know you.
Yeah, me.
All the world is the stage, you know Whitey, right?
Yes, right. But really, I just don't know a whole lot about that kind of lifestyle. I'm just curious. Because, like I said, I've just never known anybody that performed or
mm-hmm.
that was into that world. I just, you know, that's all.
Well, you know, Martha Graham said to be in that world, you have to be doom eager. And doom eager means, and this one woman went up and she said, I want my child to do this and I want my child to do that. And Martha Graham looked at her and said, your child is not doom eager. you might be due meager, but she's not due meager. You know, and she said there's only one child in thousands and thousands that are due meager. And, you know, I've always remembered that. I went into class. Martha Graham came in to teach. She never moved. She looked, I thought she was dead. But she had dancers that would demonstrate, and then she would just look at you and go, right, wrong, right. But she wouldn't correct. And the stuff that she had you do was impossible. It was like Yaichina Muir. I mean, to get into these positions was excruciating. It was like roughing. But then she did a full dance after that on the stage, and people said she was so drunk she could hardly stand up, but the minute she hit the stage, it was like watching God. You know, I never saw her dance, but I did see Judith Jameson dance. And you know, sometimes it's like watching, you know, you want to take those moments in time for a show or that, and you just, you think, oh, my God, how can I keep this, you know? And, you know, Merce Cunningham said you have to love dancing or acting to stick to it. It gives you nothing back, no manuscripts to store away, dancing doesn't, no paintings to show on the walls and maybe hang in museum, no poems to be printed and sold around dancing, nothing but that single fleeting moment when you feel alive. It is not for unsteady souls. That's what Merce Cunningham said. So I always think of
as a little girl, were you performing then?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I performed a lot as a child.
Like on Broadway?
I didn't do Broadway. I danced on the Steel Pier. I danced in shows. We traveled around.
You danced on the what?
Steel Pier in Atlantic City. It was in the summertime. It was like they had this thing that goes out into the ocean, Joan, and they had big shows on it. I then started dancing in regional theater. I was playing in professional theater. I was playing Anita in West Side Story and choreographing at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, and also choreographing a show for the next week. And I got out in the middle of the dance at the gym and I forgot that I told them only to do two and I did another one. I got kicked in the head and I was knocked out. And I walked off the stage, and the producer said to me, you have to make a choice. Do you want to be a choreographer, or do you want to be on the stage? And at that moment in time, it was another big moment, I said, I want to be a choreographer.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was, I mean, that was what made me sing, when I stood there and watched. And it was interesting because Joanne did a wedding this week of Lilia. I don't know if you remember Lilia, Kate.
Sounds familiar.
She was Maria in West Side Story. Lilia Nice and David Nice are really political, but she was Maria in West Side Story, and she was she played Oliver in high school, and when I worked over there and all, and it was so interesting. Her daughter was getting married, and you go, my gosh, where? I said to her, where did it all go? You know, a moment ago I saw you standing on the stage singing "Where Is Love," you know. Where does it all go, girls?
Well, don't forget, you just did a choreography dance of Thriller.
Yes, I did. You should have seen how I was instantaneously re-choreographing that.
I want to know what you thought, Kate. I can't wait to see this dance.
Oh, the nurses and Kate, they were so wonderful. Kate is playing Michael Jackson.
That's going to be fabulous.
Yes.
Well,
I'm
learning the dance by watching him do it, basically.
Oh, good. Well, I changed a lot of, I changed stuff in there. I made it easier, you know.
Yeah, you did. Yeah. And then the secretary of the group did write down every part of the dance.
What?
She did. Our secretary of the customer service team did write down every part of the dance.
I know. God love her heart. It was so cute. We had somebody that was counting the steps, little Julia, and then somebody wanted to write them down. So we had visionary, we had auditorial, we had all of these people that were capable. I'll write it down. I'll count it.
I know. It's great. I'll have to send you what she wrote down so that you can agree with it. I forgot to do that.
I'm sure. Well, did anybody try it? We didn't do it with music yet. Did anybody try it with music?
I do, at home.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, I love talking to you girls. That was fun.
Love talking to you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. It's so
You're always fun, Sheila. You're good.
Oh, thank you. So are you. Pretend to be normal now.
I pretend to be normal. I
love go pretend to be normal.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Love you. Bye-bye. I'm putting on the music for Mother and Child by Klaus D. Jensen, and this music can be purchased on www.praytoheal.com.